Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, the definitive source for all things competitive in the world of 40K and the ITC. As always, I'm one of your battle brothers, Eric. With me is my battle brother, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And we are back. So let's get the bad news out of the way first. The FAQ still has not dropped. There were no 40K releases of any kind this week. But that being said, I have to say, those Deepkin models, there's some work to be done there. I'm looking at those. I'm like, I can do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I can make them into mandrakes. I might make them into electro priests. There's a lot you can do with those guys. They're pretty cool looking.
Yeah, they are.
Got a good close look at the guy who's like, his cape is like a wave. That was really cool. I was thinking like maybe I can convert that into a Satan somehow. There's all kinds of that. I was looking at it's a neat army.
Yeah, they've definitely gone out of their way to make it look visually appealing.
So pretty excited. Pretty cool to see that. And it's, you know, one of the things that came up. So Sisters of Battle, we got this kind of vague, you know, plastic sisters coming in 2019. That's pretty much all we got. Imagine this is how much time and what effort, and this is the result of what plastic armies look like now that are newly sculpted from the ground up. Imagine what that Sisters of Battle models are going to look like.
I really think they could end up looking amazing.
I really do. I think the only bad news is that means the codex is probably a long ways off, because why would you, you wouldn't make a codex with all the old models in it and then but re-release the new models 6 months later? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I feel bad for it. Go ahead.
It depends on how much of a revamp they end up doing. If they stick with a lot of the old rules, but just update on the models, then there's no real reason for them, you know, to not go with what they've been working with, but we don't know what they're going to do.
True. Don't remember off the top of my head, Sisters of Battle, do they have chapter tactics or individual, like, sister, like, I guess, covens or coven or monastery? I don't know what they have. Do they have separate groups like that?
They do. And I always remember, it's kind of an odd one, but they're called orders. So basically it'd be like the order of the blank blank, you know. I can't think of any of the ones they had in the fluff, but they would always be like the order of the blank. So yeah, in their case it would just be order, the order of or whatever.
Ray, you are correct. Look at that. You've got Sisterhood Orders Militant serve as the military arm mercilessly rooting out corruption and heresy within the humanity and ever organize it and every or I can't talk, but anyway, you get the point. There are a bunch of them. This is, of course, coming from Warhammer Wiki.
Yeah, even in the fluff, they are the result of someone taking a rule as written.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, the Ecclesiarchy was told they couldn't have a standing army. But their exact words were, "You could have no men bear arms, or something like that." So they said, "Okay, we'll just give the guns to the women."
Interesting. All right. So there's the famed Order Majoris. Part ways. Spread the Emperor's light. They're tasked by the Ecclesiarchy with defending its shrine and cardinal worlds and retaking such planets from heretics, xenos, and blasphemous forces of chaos. Interesting. There's also the Order of the Bloody Rose, Order of the Martyred Lady, Order of the Valerous Heart, Order of the Argent Shroud, Order of the Ebon Chalice, and then last but not least, the Order of the Sacred Rose. So I guess three of those sound like they're on Earth. Three of them are on Ophelia 7. And then there's four other ones that look like they're off, kind of like the more minor ones. Interesting. So curious to see what they do with those.
Yeah, could be very interesting.
Could be very interesting indeed. Closer to home, or closer, I say closer to more in the next few coming months, we're expected to see Imperial Knights. So it'll be nice to see the actual household chapter tactics rule type rules come out. That'd be kind of nice, because I think that thing that's kind of been missing, that flavor on the table, the knight has been nothing more than I have knight. You know, I really don't care what household they are. And then likewise, we were thinking about this after seeing what they did with Drukhari. I can't imagine what they're going to do with Harlequins with the five or six troops that were already in the last codex, but basically didn't have any rules for them. Now they're going to add rules for at least, you'd assume at least three of them. That could be pretty cool. So I can't imagine what that fully fleshed out Harlequin codex will look like when it finally releases. That'd be pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm now that all the codexes for the armies that I really majorly play are out, I'm just waiting to see what the rest of them come out with.
Well, it's interesting because it also will shake up the meta quite a bit. So let's use that as a transition into our review of last week's tournaments, because take note of the armies that finished in the top eight at this past GT. It could be the future of 40K for the rest of 2018. All right, we're back. As we mentioned last week, Ray mentioned we only had one GT over the past weekend, but it is pretty significant because this is the first major or GT level event since the Necron and Tau Empire codices have been out. Players have had a chance to kind of peruse the book and come out with an army. And, will they have made an impact? Let's take a look at the top eight for the Colorado Cutthroats 40K Grand Tournament. So coming in eighth place, Randall Nelson with Tau Empire. He was playing Tau Sept, and those for you keeping track at home. In seventh place, Zach Kerstetter playing Harlequins. You heard me right. James Coons playing Alaytok came in sixth place. Evesven Chun with Dark Angels came in fifth. Gregory Wright came in fourth, playing Cadian Shock Troops. In third place, Ben Neal, also with Tau Empire. In second place, friend of the shows and used to be part of our local meta. Glad to see he's still doing well. Nathan Cartnell with Grey Knights. God, he's still playing Grey Knights. That's impressive. And your winner of the 2018 Colorado Cutthroats is none other than Corey DeLemo with Necrons. So for a quick recap, Necrons finished top of a GT and Tau finished three of the top eight.
Big change up in what we see.
Big change up. Big change up. And it's not like the other armies weren't there. Top Chaos player was Travis Smith in ninth. There were several more Tau coming down the pike. Will Stamp came in 13th place with Thousand Suns. Several Tyranid players. Matt Evans looks like to be the best of them at 15th place. Will Hodges with Blood Angels came in 18th place. Andrew Jennings, another Chaos player, 20th place. Another Chaos player, 22nd place, Matthew Fortune. So they're there. They just, the new guys stepped up and took over. By the way, I got a quick shout out. I feel really bad for this guy. For all you Space Wolf players who are upset that your codex hasn't come out yet, tell that to Kevin Thomas. He came in last place going a perfect 0-5. Yeah, sorry about that. Anyway, let's take a look at what do these winning lists look like and what does the future, because what I thought was really interesting, we spent a little more time in this. For one, we only have one tournament to talk about. But number two, sometimes when you read stuff online and people do those quick reviews of codices, and Ray and I fall into that trap too. You have the codex lens on your lap. You've got 48 hours to read it, record, and get your material out. Sometimes you miss stuff. All these lists have the basic archetype, but each of these players did something different than you've ever seen before with these particular lists. So let's go start with Corey. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name, Corey. I apologize. Nelemo with Necrons.
Yes.
So a little bit different from what we've seen. So we'll start off. It starts off with his dynamic choice for his first attachment, which is a battalion, being Mefrit, which is a rather popular choice. He starts with a Cryptech with a Chronometron and Staff of Light. His Warlord is a Destroyer Lord with the Artifact, a Nanoscarab Casket, Phylactery, and Warscythe. Yeah, street troop choices, one unit of 9 mortals, one unit of 9 immortals, one with Gauss Blaster, the other with a Tesla Carbine, and a unit of 19 Necron Warriors. He's got Nightbringer in the elite slot, in the fast attack slot, a unit of 5 Canoptic Wraiths. Interesting, no whip coils. Also has a unit of 5 Destroyers, 4 being the standard version, 1 being the heavy. And his final detachment is a super heavy auxiliary. He brought also Mephrit, and he brought himself a Tesseract Vault.
Okay, that makes sense. One thing I've heard a lot of is that the Satan really they really shine in this codex.
Yeah, they got they're a huge source of this inflicting mortal wounds on your opponent. So and it's kind of interesting because they look and feel like psychic powers, but they're not, which means they never fail and they never peril. So big difference between the Satan on the outside versus the Satan in the Tesseract Vault. The Tesseract Vault gets like pretty much +1 to everything. It's disgusting. Not to mention the Tesseract Vault also has 4 Tesla Destroyers, I think they're called.
I think they're Tesla Spheres.
Tesla Spheres. Yeah. All I know is they're Assault 5 each, Strength 5, and 6s to hit, inflict 2 additional hits.
Yeah, they are Tesla.
And with the new rules, the old rules used to be this whole big thing is what were their firing arcs? Because they're on corners, so you saw like Necron players trying to pivot their Tesseract Vault or Obelisk to kind of get the... Now with the new rules, it's in range, the model has line of sight, all 4 can shoot at the same target, even if it's shooting through the model, it doesn't matter anymore. So that makes it, 20 shots. You figure hitting on 3s, you're looking at least 13 hits without the Tesla. And then you figure, okay, that's another 2. You're probably looking at another 16, 17 hits at strength 5 per volley. Right away. Plus all the mortal wounds. Plus you got 3 pretty strong troop choices in the 2 immortals and the warriors, so they can hold down some objectives and quite a bit of resiliency, especially with the Cryptek. I'm assuming the Destroyer Lord goes with the Destroyers. I'm just going to go on a hunch on that one.
Yeah.
And then the Wraiths provide a pretty good forward threat because they're still pretty quick. And with the upgrades, their claws now being damaged too. It's a pretty nasty list. And verifiably, he went 5-0 with that list.
I think the thing I like the most is that this isn't just a list of warrior spam, which I remember hearing a lot of talk, especially right at the when the codex was starting to get rumored. All I kept hearing about was warrior spam. And while they did have a large unit of warriors, that was not all they had.
Now, it's got a good mix of things. There's still some pundits on the internet, too, that disagree that the warrior spam is not the way to go to actually do MSU with warriors. It's because that way you're not as vulnerable to leadership. I don't know, leadership 10. So if you lose less than 4 guys in a round, which is the arm, basically MEQs, I guess you could lose that to number of foes. But the idea is the longer the unit's around, the more chances you get for those guys to come back with reanimation protocols.
You got to remember, though, any unit or model that gets removed from the field because of morale does not get to come back.
No, you're right. And I get the whole, they so let's say you go with the whole 20-man blob. So like I said, their leadership 10. So if you lose less than 4 or less, you're not worried about a leadership test because their leadership 10, I believe they're still leadership 10, right? I think they are. Yeah. And so it's that fifth one that if you roll a 6, that one Necron's not going to come back from reanimation protocols. You're right. But that's a lot of damage. Let's be honest. If you're going to be losing more than 5 in one go, you might be losing the squad anyway. But it sounds like, way he's mixed it with a couple of 9-man squads and a 19-man squad, kind of found maybe that's the sweet spot, sort of a medium range.
Right.
All right. One of our locals who's moved up north to Colorado, Nathan Cartmell, he's even when he lived down here, he was playing Grey Knights, And his list is pretty much your tried and true Grey Knight list, which is competitive right now. Two HQ slots are pretty much identical. Grandmaster and the Nemesis Dread Knight, each with two Dread Fists, a heavy side cannon, and a Gatling silencer. One of them has the Gate of Infinity, and the other one has Sanctuary, and both have the Dread Knight teleporter. He also took Lord Khalgar Drago. He gave him Hammerhand and Purge Soul. Follows it up with 3 5 band strike squads. The only thing he varied here is the spells. So he's got Sanctuary on one, Astral Aim on the second, and Vortex of Doom on the third. His fast detect is an interceptor squad with Hammerhand. And he's got a unit of 5 there as well. Let's follow that up with a Storm Raven gunship with 2 Storm Strike missile launchers, 2 heavy bolters, 2 las cannons, and 2 hurricane bolters. This is the part everybody gives him grief for, but you know, it's a whopping 200 points. He added another battalion of Astra Militarum. This time they're Mordians. 2 company commanders, one of them with Kurvos Aquila. He's got 3 infantry squads, looks like squads of 8, with a 1 heavy weapon team of a mortar on all 3. Then included another Vanguard detachment with an Inquisitor, an Acolyte, 2 assassins, 1 Calidus, 1 Calexus, and it comes in at a perfect 1999.
Okay. Not entirely surprised for that.
No. No real surprises there, but you know what? You go with what works, and Nathan actually dropped his first game and then ran the table, going 4-0 for the rest of the tournament, and he also posted some really big scores. He scored at least 31 points in every game, and in his last 3 games, he scored 38 or more points in every game. So he knows what he's doing. But that is, yeah, pretty much your, right out of the box, that's your Grey Knight army that you're facing on a regular basis. Ben Neal came in 3rd with Tau Empire, and this is one of those lists you hear about it, some people talked about it, and he added just of his own little flavor to it, which maybe made the difference between being some of the other Tau players that finished in the middle of the pack versus him in the top 8. So right off the bat, he starts with a Cadre Fireblade, very handy, as well as a Cold Star battle suit with 4 fusion blasters. Again, that sounds pretty stock so far. 3 5 man unit of strike teams with pulse rifles. So no doubt the Cadre Fireblade's there to back them up. And then he took a unit of 8 tactical shield drones, a Yavara battle suit with advanced targeting system, as well as target lock. So far, no surprises yet. He then follows this up with a Vanguard detachment, which includes, I know what I forgot to mention. So the previous detachment dispension was a Boar concept. The second detachment, which I have not started to talk about, is actually a Farsight Enclave. It starts with a basic commander, the XV8 crisis suit type. So this is the old commander suit, for those of you who still have the vintage models. And that is actually his warlord, and he's taken through Unity Devastation. And he's got on him a flamer and drone controller. That's it. Interesting. Utility. He also has a unit of 5 crisis suits, and this is where the firepower comes from. He has 4 shield drones in that unit, and each of the 5 crisis suits has 3 cyclic ion blasters. This is a moment where Eric gets to be old. Back in my day, cyclic ionic blasters were 1 per army.
Anyway. It was second edition, right?
Tau weren't around in second edition, wise guy.
No, that's why I said it.
Mm-hmm.
They came out, what, 4th?
Yes. Okay. So, rounding out, so he's got this large crisis suit bomb for this Farsight command. In addition to that, he's backed that same detachment of Farsight Conclaves with 2 Ghost Kill battle suits, each identical with 2 flamers, a cyclic ion raker, and shield drone and target lock. And then, last but not least, in the fast attack slot, he took 5 marker drones. And here's where it gets a little interesting. So you thought that was a little offbeat? Brace yourselves. He now took a fortification detachment. Bet you forgot about those, huh? And so I think I never know how to pronounce this. Sakea, I think it is Sakea Sept. He's running 3 remote sensor towers with high intensity marker lights. So that's where he's getting all his marker lights from. Very interesting. So he's got a ton of firepower. He's got from the Avara. He's got the bomb. He's got the fire warriors to make up all the hold the objectives. And then he's got this extra marker light support. Hang on, let's take a look. All right, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the remote sensor tower, let us educate. It comes in, it has a ballistic skill of 4+, so right off the bat, it's a little bit more accurate than your average marker drone. Toughness 6, 3 wounds with a R4+ armor save. And it's equipped with a high-intensity marker light. So it's range 36, heavy 1. A hit from a high-intensity marker light causes no damage, but allows 3 marker light counters to be placed on target unit. So don't need to roll a 6 for that. 1 hit, 3 marker lights. It is immobile, so once you put it on the table in deployment, it's there for the rest of the game. And it is automatically hit by enemy models in the fight phase. And the other fun part, positional relay. At the start of your shooting phase, select 1 friendly sept unit within 3 inches of the remote sensor tower. Reroll all hits of 1 from that unit during that phase. That's pretty handy. So bet you haven't seen that before. Check it out. Talk to your local Forge World dealer. Hear you.
Every group's got that one guy.
Maybe you get that friend as to, hey, I'm putting in a Forge World order. Who wants to come in so we can get free shipping? Yeah. And these models are actually pretty cool. They're like these skinny little towers. They kind of look like space heaters that we see out here in Arizona. So pretty cool. Anyway, so that is Ben Neal with his Tau Empire. I want to go over one more list in depth, and that is Evison Chun. He came in 5th place with Dark Angels. When we get to our main discussion, why this is such a big deal, why Dark Angels did well, it hasn't happened a whole lot this season. So dying to see what does this guy do differently, and this is exactly what I was hoping for. Kind of secretly wanted to make a fallen list, but yeah, it just doesn't work that way. Anyway, he starts with a battalion. HQ choice is Azrael. He's got a chapter master with jump pack, a mastercrafted bolt gun, and a power sword. His troops, brace yourselves, 3 units of 5 intercessor squads, all with bolt rifles. Elite choice, he's got a company ancient with bolt pistol. In the fast attack, he's got inceptor squad of 5 with a sergeant, all with plasma exterminators. He's got a Ravenwing dark shroud with a heavy bolter. Finally, in the heavy support area, he's got a Hellblaster squad of 7, all of them with plasma incinerators, and then a Relic Leviathan Dreadnought with a Cyclonic Melta Lance Grav Flux Bombardment and 2 heavy flamers. That was enough. He also added a Stormraven gunship, 2 assault cannons, twin heavy bolter, 2 hurricane bolters, and twin storm strike missile launchers. So one of the things that if someone had sent me this list, hey, what's your critique on this? The first thing is that you don't have enough bodies on the table.
That's what I was thinking.
But then I remember they're all 2 wounds each. So not only you need to, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's like doubling because it's a little bit better than that. Because remember, you're inflicting 2 wounds, but you're only killing 1 model. So therefore, the morale tests are going to be lower. So you can get away with some larger squads. I love the Hellblasters, the Hellblaster squad. Our buddy here locally, Mark Wright, does that for a while with his Blood Angels. I hated that thing because there's that stratagem where they can basically intercept. So if you come down from Deep Strike, he gets a free shot at you.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that thing. Oh. My whole army loves to Deep Strike. So he just sits there and goes, okay, what's going to die first? I'm like, shh, thanks, Mark. I was surprised he didn't use, I forgot what's called, the heavy weapon guys with the bolter gauntlets. Aggressors.
the aggressor. The problem with the aggressors is that they don't have much of a longer range than anybody else. And they're slower. So we're talking about guys who their best. The best thing you can do with them is find some way to deep strike them in, and then have them sit in one place. That's the best you can get with them. Because when they stand still, they're twice.
Not only that, but being Dark Angels, they also get the reroll ones to hit. So that's why I thought we'd see more of them. But I didn't look at their range. You might have a point there. That's probably what was holding them back. But having talked to some other Marine players who are using a lot more Primaris Marines, and that's same thing with the Intercessors. Like, why Intercessors over more, you know, Scouts or more just tactical Marines, because they're cheaper. And he goes, it's the range on the gun and two wounds, and you really don't need that many Scouts. Scouts are great for deployment, but they really don't hold up as the game progresses. So I'm like, oh, interesting. Yeah.
No, Scouts work best at basically taking away from your opponent's ability to deploy things that do what Scouts do, which is take up the middle field. So have two, and if you're able to deploy one roughly about, I don't know, it's about a third of the way in from one table edge, and then if you're able to do it a third of the way in from the other table edge, and then you get this nice little extra bubble of you can't get close.
It's a good point, kind of like a layering effect. So you kill one layer, there's another layer right there, not going to get that much closer. Pretty cool. I said that we can look at, that was our last list. I lied. It's not often going to Harlequin to make it to the top of anything. So the fact that they finished in the top eight, we need to look at that list. And for those of you who like to, I don't know, it's not a pure Harlequin list, but to me, this is as pure Inari as you can get. So I think it is a very fluffy list. And don't hate the player, hate the game. So his first battalion detachment is strictly Inari. And it has a Warlock with Quicken and Restrain. He also has Yvrain with Word of the Phoenix. He has two Cabalite Warriors. Interesting. Doesn't mention if he's using, I'm assuming he's using Drakari Codex with them. And a unit of five Rangers in his troop slot. He's got a unit of five Shining Spears with the Exarch. Exarch did take a Star Lance, in case you're wondering. Heavy support, no surprise here. Seven Dark Reapers plus the Exarch with a, interesting, he has a Tempest Launcher, plus surprise. Second detachment, Supreme Command detachment. Also, this is all Eldari Craft Worlds. He has an Autarch Skyrunner, a Farseer, and as well as a Warlock. The Farseer has Guide Doom, and the Warlock has Protect and Jinx. The Autarch Skyrunner has a Banshee Mask, a Fusion Gun, Laser Lance, and Turn Shuriken Catapult on his jet bike. So he's definitely going in with the Shining Spears, using the Banshee Mask to block any attempts at Overwatch as the rest of the squad jumps in. All right, his last battalion, this is where the Harlequins come in. He starts with a Shadow Seer with Twilight Pathways and a Shuriken Pistol. For those of you unfamiliar with Twilight Pathways, that is the Harlequin version of Warp Time. It pairs really well with Harlequins because they can advance and charge in the same turn naturally. No stratagems required. Makes them very quick and very sneak up on you if you're not ready for it. He also has a Troop Master with a Fusion Pistol and a Harlequin's Caress. For those of you who don't know, that is Strength 4. I believe it's minus 3 AP. He's then got 1, 2, 3 troops of 5. Each of them, all 5 members of the troop, have Harlequin's Embrace. And then 3 of the 5 have a Fusion Pistol as well. So he's got a lot of anti-tank in those little guys. And all of them get to ride in their choice of Star Reavers. They have 3 in the unit, as well as they're kitted out with 2 Shuriken Cannons. So, yes, majority of the points are coming from the Harlequins, but there's a lot of buffing going on from the Craft World and Inari side of things. Curious to see what that list looks like in a couple weeks once the Harlequin Codex actually comes out.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the 3 that they mentioned, right?
Yes. The one we haven't talked about yet is Death Watch. Haven't seen much of that, but it's one of those, it could be really awesome. We've seen what they did with Custodes and making elite armies great, or it just could be a complete flop. I don't think there's going to be a middle ground, but I'm optimistic. They've gotten it right well so far this year. So.
Yeah, I think it'll kind of depend on partly what they do with that and then how they fit the Primaris Marines in, because they are going to get them, like Grey Knights.
And one thing I'm just excited, I would play Death Watch in a second if they do it, is Aggressors with special ammo. That would just be so awesome.
I guess we'll find out in the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, don't jinx it.
There's three coming out. The Knights are coming too. So
congratulations to all the winners of the Colorado Cutthroats GT 2018. Coming up after the break, Ray and I dive into our discussion for this week, and we've been doing some number crunching. Who is really the most winning faction, and who stands the most improvement in the rest of 2018? Come talk to us after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, we're back. And a couple months ago, at the start of the ITC season, we made a promise to you that we would start tracking some statistics, some next-level knowledge on how things are going in the ITC. We haven't forgotten about it. It just took a little while to compile the data, not so much that it took time to make this little spreadsheet that we're going to read from, but more importantly, make sure there are enough games to make things relevant. So one of the things we talked about in that Colorado Cutthroats tournament, Grey Knights, Harlequins, as well as Dark Angels making the top. Very unusual. How unusual? Well, we've got the numbers for you. So pretty interesting how things have shaped up so far in the ITC. There will be some surprises and a few things to look forward to as these new codices drop. So Ray, if I had to ask you, what do you think would be the best faction-wise? What is the best army in 40K currently?
I remember a lot of talk, at least for a while, granted this was in 2017, of Astra Militarum being top. I wouldn't say that this would be the case this time. I'd almost want to take that jab and say maybe Craftworld, but I don't know. I don't keep as close of a track on the top winning factions as you do.
All right, so let's fill that in, and you know what? You'd be right, and you'd be right. So back in the day, Militarum was dubbed to be the powerhouse, and they were at the time, and they're actually the most popular army to be played in competitive play. So take every GT and major event that has been played in the 2018 ITC season. Astra Militarum has made 33 appearances, more than any other faction so far in the ITC. Their win-loss record, however, is about middle of the pack, interesting enough. They have yet to go undefeated, so they've yet to win a major or GT-level tournament. However, they finished with 4 wins 6 times, which is one of the higher percentages among teams. But interesting, they've also had some really bad days. They've had 15 times out of their 33, so about half of the time they finish with less than 3 wins. So a record of either 2-4, 1-5, or 0-6. And that is actually one of the highest percentages and one of the highest drop-offs at that particular area. So they're kind of a middle army, kind of what they call a gatekeeper army. You got to be prepared for them, be able to beat them to get to the upper levels of that particular tournament. But they haven't quite pulled out the win yet. You mentioned Eldar, Craftworld. It's been hard to separate Eldari from Inari, because there's a lot of people that play a lot of Eldari with some Inari seasoning, or maybe one or two added detachments, but they have been very dominant at least so far this season. So Eldari by themselves have been in 24 tournaments so far this year. They've gone undefeated 4 times. That is the most of any faction currently in the ITC. They've gone at least 4-0 after four games 9 times. So they've gone either 4-1 or 5-0, a total of 13 times, most of any faction currently in the ITC. They've also had some rough spots. They've gone below 3 wins 7 times, but that's when you look at the overall percentage, they're plus 6. They're by far the far and away the best faction when it comes to winning tournaments. The only one that comes close to that is, surprise, surprise, Inari. 12 appearances, not as often as Eldari, but they have very similar statistics, 2 wins. So twice they've gone undefeated, 6 times they've had at least 4 wins, and only twice has a pure Inari list ever lost more than 3 games. So interesting there. One other fact real quick about Inari. On day 1, they're the highest scoring faction. They averaged 26 ITC points on day 1, highest among any faction, and then they backed it up on day 2 with 24 points. The reason why we separate that is day 2, you tend to be playing more armies of your equal level, so it's a kind of a higher pressure win situation. So guess what, Ray? You were right. So one other army everyone was afraid of and kind of saying this is like the most biggest powerhouse was Chaos Space Marines. Chaos Space Marines came out of the are still doing well, actually. They came out of the gates pretty strong. May have slipped a little bit. They may kind of come back a little bit. 30 appearances so far. Twice have gone undefeated. So the only non-pointy-eared faction to have 2 appearances where they went undefeated. Altogether, 8 times out of 30 that they had at least 4 wins. So they did really well there, but they seem to really have either win well, either win big or lose big. Because after those 8 wins, 8 strong appearances, they had 13 appearances where they had less than 3 wins. So it's either all or nothing. So keep that in mind if you're a Chaos player.
So it looks like there are 2 factions that are tied for showing up the least in tournaments, and that's the Space Wolves and the Gene Stealer Cult.
With very different results. So Space Wolves are dead last. They've never won 5 games. They've never won 4 games. Matter of fact, half the time they get 3 wins, and the other half the time they get less than 3 wins. So does that mean, I don't know, with 4 games, I don't think that's enough data to really be significant. But yeah, it's tough times for Space Wolf players right now.
They've got in their 4 appearances, twice they went 4 wins, and the other 2 times they went with less than 3. So definitely 2 different.
So again, yeah. So Gene Stealer Cult's another one, win big or lose big. There's again, 4 games, really hard for me to say, hey, that's how the faction rolls, but knowing what I know of Gene Stealer Cult, that seems about right. You know, either works for you or it doesn't.
Yeah. Let's see. Here's one of my favorites, Thousand Suns. They've been around, their codex has been around long enough for some decent data. Let's see. 7 games? Not a lot.
That's it.
Not a single instance of 5 wins, and only 2 of having 4 wins. Oof. Bit tough.
Yeah, having a little tough time out there. But I think it's a newer army, and I think, you know, the first players to come out and play with Thousand Suns were guys that had Thousand Suns from years past and probably just played them as a Chaos Space Marine army. Now they got their own decks. They're all excited. And, you know, they're kind of new. You know, there's not a lot of knowledge to tap into to figure out how do you play Thousand Suns competitively, especially when you throw in all those new units like Zangors, right, and Vortex Beasts. So that's one of those on kind of a wait and see army and see how that works out. What's interesting, though, is another army, another faction, I should say, that's very similar to that, where people have the models waiting for a decent codex to drop, and it finally did, was Tyranids. They have 32 appearances already, second most in the ITC, tied with Space Marine. So there's as many Nid players as there are Space Marine players. Let that soak in for a minute. There are as many Space Marine players as there are Nid players in the ITC right now. So anyway, NIDS have done fairly well. Got an even split. Once they went undefeated, 6 appearances out of their 32. They've had more than 4 wins. But man, when they lose bad. 18 times they have less than 3 wins, which is actually the highest. So I think, again, it's one of those getting used to the new decks and getting used to having high fleet rules and getting the hang of the game.
All right. Let's see.
Talked about Harlequins in the last tournament report there. Prior to last weekend, a Harlequin player never had more than 3 wins in a grand tournament. So, huge accomplishment to come into the top 8. It's a great job there. Same thing with Dark Angels. They just had a miserable, something like 70% of their games that they appeared in GT or majors levels, fewer than 3 wins. So really big accomplishments from both those players doing well in this past tournament. One other area I wanted to bring up is the 3 codices that just dropped. So let's look at our new guys here. Ray, let's look at Necrons first, your favorite.
All right. 7 games. Not a single 5. Well, let's be honest, this doesn't show this last weekend's information, though, does it?
It does not. So, but it's interesting to show you prior to the Codex, never won a tournament. Get a Codex, they're back on top.
Yeah.
5-0.
Up to that point, they had 3 instances of getting 3 wins, and either 4 were below 3 wins. So that's a definite boost showing with that. Now that they've got the Codex.
Let's take a look at Tau Empire at the same time. I can tell you guys that, so right now, year to date, 11 appearances by the Tau Empire, not counting this past weekend. 6 of those came since the Codex dropped. So huge uptick already in use. Already 3 games rather, with more than 4 wins. 6 game appearances with less than 3 wins. So we start factoring in the games from last weekend. You're going to start seeing a nice even trend, a lot more 4 win appearances, but a couple 3 win appearances. Tau Empire seem to be back on their way into getting into the solid competitive part of the meta. Of course, like, wouldn't be a show if I didn't talk about Chikari, right? Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Chikari. So if you're a Chikari player, up is the only direction you can go in. No Chikari player in GT so far or a major appearances has had more than 3 wins. And a matter of fact, most of them had only 3 wins and a couple guys had less than 3 wins. The interesting part about the statistics, if you look at this, no other faction scores more points on day 2 than Chikari. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. How does that happen? It's easy. No other army other than Dark Angels has a worse record on day 1. So basically, your average Chikari player, if you're going to a 2-day tournament and you're going out with your buddies on Saturday night and you have more than 1 win, you're doing fantastic. They've averaged a whopping 1.1 wins on day 1. So then they could play like, you know, the bottom half of the table and do great on day 2. So be curious to see as the Codex drops, to see if we improve those win-loss percentages a little bit better.
So you think this will be something we'll come back to in August? Another 4 months?
We'll try and update it. Yeah, it's when we have a slow period, I'll also post this also up on our Facebook page so you guys can peruse and see what else is up there. So other interesting statistics to point out, Chaos Space Marines, for example. Big players on day 1, they average 1.8 wins. So if you're going 2-0 on day 1 of the Chaos Space Marine, you're having an average day. However, where they usually fall down is day 2. Once they hit that heavier competition, that Codex is just not hanging with the top echelon players. They have one of the worst drop-offs. They're less than a win on day 2, 0.9 wins on day 2. So they're really having a difficult time. Another army that fits the same bill as Cult Mechanicus, do really well on day 1, cannot seem to close the deal on day 2. So I guess it's that tougher competition, they're having a more difficult time.
Well, it's definitely intense to look at if you don't know what you're looking at. So if you pay attention to this episode, you'll have a better understanding of what all these numbers mean.
Yep, lots of numbers compiled. If you're looking for them on Bescope's pairings, good luck. It's not there. Yeah, you and I had to hand tabulate all this. So in case you're wondering how these are tabulated, simply as mentioned, these only count GT level and major level events. And by the way, if you dropped out of the event, I did not count your scores to these totals because that would just skew things. Well, why does, you know, a faction only play two or three games in a five round event? They will not be shown in this particular format. So hope that was insightful. Give you an idea where you rank. Again, log on to Exterminatus on our Facebook page, and you can see all the numbers for yourselves. Coming back after the break, we'll go over the ITC top 10 as they rank currently, as well as upcoming ITC events for the next weekend. All right, we are back in this week's ITC Top 10. We had a little bit of movement, as I mentioned, with only one GT last weekend, but we do know that the guys at Best Coast Pairings are still entering some of the older tournaments. So as later data is finally getting logged in, there's still a little bit of movement in your ITC Top 10. So without any further ado, let's take a look into that. Moving into 10th place, knocking out Ryan Olson from the Top 10 is Daniel Hesters. He comes in at 343 points. That's the new benchmark for reaching the top 10. But he's still got a long way to go. He is 274 points off the lead. Give you an idea of where that guy stands. In ninth place, from Team Canada, Stephen Pamperine. He's also 254 points off the lead and holding a narrow 20-point lead over Daniel Hesters. Eighth place, same as he was last week, Patrick McNeil. Losing a little bit of ground. No, I'll take that back. He's still at 253 points behind the leader. In seventh place, Jeff in Control Robinson with his custodes still remains 250 points behind the lead. Sixth place, Jeremy Applebaum sitting pretty at 241 points behind the lead. Mitch Pelham, Mr. Hellhound himself, 198 points behind our leader. Fourth place, Gary Frank, 191 points behind the lead. Daniel Sansone still in third place, 168 points off the lead. Matt Root made some ground up on the lead, but couldn't quite overtake it. He's 53 points behind the leader. So that means for the fifth week in a row, Joshua Death remains your top player in the ITC, sitting on top of the rankings at 617 points. So as we've mentioned, not all these players have gotten their full amount. So these standings are quite fluid. Be sure to listen to us every week, and we give you quick updates on the ITC rankings. But just a quick rundown, Josh Death being in first place, he does have five events. So he's competed in a major, at least two GTs, and three RTTs. So he's got his full points at this point. Matt Root has four events. Daniel Sansone has five events. Gary Frank, as well as Mitch Pelham and Jeremy Applepon, are sitting at four events. Jeff Robinson's in a really good position. He's in seventh place with only three events. So as I mentioned last week, he's averaging about 120 points per event, which is just actually ahead of our current leader at this point. So if he continues that pace, he could easily vault himself into the lead. Patrick McNeil has had four events. Stephen Pamperine and Daniel Hesters, who just moved into the top 10, also with three events, very good position to move further into the ITC top 10. So quite a few of the big events still coming up in the next few months. So again, listen to the Exterminatus podcast. Keep you up to date at all the rankings. Speaking of which, Ray, what events do we have coming up next weekend?
So we actually don't have any GTs or higher listed under Best Coast Pairings as of now. If something comes up later in the week, it'll be there. But as of right now, there's nothing listed.
Fair enough, and it's also good to look at some of those RTT events. We usually don't report on those here on the show, but it's always take a good look at Advantage of the BCP app and see what lists are being run, because the better players use the RTTs to hone their lists and find out what's working, what's not working. So with that, just a quick reminder, you've probably heard the commercial here during our show, May 19th and 20th, Ray and I are throwing our own GT level event, hopefully to be a major if we get enough players. It's the Scorched Earth Open. May 19th and 20th. Check it out. The tickets are available on the Best Ghost Pairings app. Again, any additional breaking news, check out our Facebook page. Until next week's show, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And this has been the Exterminatus Podcast.